This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
The Final Four now.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu, coming at you Sunday night here. So big win down in Tallahassee, fellas. Took on the Seminoles 76-67. A little bit of a tongue twist there. I'm not going to bury the lead here. We're going to talk a lot about Jared McCain. He was clearly the star of this one. Big night, 35 points, setting some records there. Another solid performance from Roach, even sometimes... Again, it's these games where he can just coast, it feels like, but all of his buckets are just so clutch. Got 17 and 4 from him. Only guy in double figures, so maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. Notable absent from Tyrese Proctor yesterday. Didn't make the trip down, dealing with some concussion stuff. Hopefully everything's going good on that. Haven't heard a ton about that. But fellas, let's just kind of jump right in here. So again, I'm not going to bury anything. Let's just kind of talk about Jared. First half, 25 of the 44 points with the big one coming right before the half two. The dagger hit the silencer to the crowd here. Raul, I know you had a lot going on, but you were catching some of the game there. What did you take of Jared's first half explosion?
Well, yeah, it was interesting because I didn't think he was like running off a lot of screens or anything like that. It was like the first few he got were like defensive lapses from FSU, like a bad closeout and then not catching him in transition. But yeah, then after that, he was just mismatch hunting. He was getting a bigger guy on him and then just kind of taking a step to make it look like he was going to drive, stepping back and just nailing the three in their face. So yeah, it was just great individual basketball, honestly. It wasn't like we were running super clever stuff like double drag screens or anything like that.
Yeah, it wasn't JJ type treatment in terms of like running off screen. I mean, several of those after that first one he hit in the corner, hit two or three that were like pretty deep.
Yeah. Right?
And then you mentioned
that
a
one
lot
at the
of
top of the key that bounced
was,
in.
Bounced yeah, in. That was a heat like check. Close look to logo status there. Shoot, what about you? Just first half here, walk me through the Jared McCain experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that's fun to watch. I don't know if we've had Cam Reddish had a game like that maybe where he hit six or seven threes.
Maybe also against Florida State, maybe?
Yeah, the game where he had the game winner, I think he had six threes, maybe.
Okay.
Or at least five.
And I'm sure Gary had to have hit you know, several in a game. Yeah, it's just fun to watch. I mean, like you said, the one that bounced in just seemed like a heat check. But when they're going in like that, you know, it was, what, six of seven when he finally missed one?
He made his first eight shots of the game, made his first six threes.
Yep. And some of them, like you said, off the bounce, stepping in with a big guy, just.
And it wasn't just like the traditional step back three, like that one that he made on the, like, I think it was the right or left wing where he just like has to take like three steps back and then still is like fading away over that dude and just drills it. Clearly, the crowd had some stuff for him prior. Like he was going back and forth with some people out there. to me, when I was watching it, it was like, that's how I felt watching like Andre Dawkins in like 2011, 12-ish, right? Where he would have some of those like 25, 28 point kind of like halves.
Win games for us, you know?
And I want to say one of them was also against Florida State, man. I think there was.
12, I think.
Yep. We had a huge first or second half just torching them. I mean, and they let them keep doing it. So, you know, paint your nails, paint your nails.
You know, I feel like a lot of guys can shoot 45% from three on catch and shoots, but you saw in this game, like, he's going to have the ability at the next level to shoot off the dribble. And that's such a big skill because he's able to dribble and then get on balance so quickly.
Yeah. And he's got this awesome upper body balance too, right? Where his legs are kind of doing it, but like up, shoulders up, like he is just squared every time. Like, it doesn't matter like how he catches it or how he's like falling back. And he's also got that one ability, like the one where this is skipping ahead a little bit, but they got the technical and then he got kicked back out. Well, flip went in and we'll talk about flip, but got blocked and it just kind of lands to him and he just takes another step back and just immediately kind of just flicks it in there. His night, I think the only complaint that I had is that he only took 11 threes. Like, if you're making eight and you make your first six, it's like, dude, I want you getting 15 up, at least 15 up.
Well, that's why I thought we actually, this may be jumping ahead to talk about flip a little bit, but that's why I thought we actually played better when Ryan was in the game, especially in the first half. We went on two like big runs when he came in. It wasn't anything Ryan was doing, in my opinion. It was just the whole offense was running through Jared instead of, you know, having to give flip a bunch of touches.
Just heating up with Jared. Speaking of the offense a little bit, we talked a lot with Brian Geisner when he was on about some of our just like empty side pick and roll. And it didn't seem like we were doing that like a ton like yesterday. Most of our ball screens seemed to be kind of like top of the key.
Yep.
Maybe there was something strategic in that.
Length and speed all around.
Trying to get them to collapse more so that you could actually kind of get out and do some stuff.
You could tell whenever we would try to get into the paint, they were collapsing like three guys in.
Yeah.
Like, that's how, I mean, what we have. Flip had six turnovers. Roach and McCain both had like 5 and 4. I mean,
they had 9 blocks. We shoot 40% from two, which is not good. Right. So, I mean, clearly the length was a problem. Like all day, it was a problem. Thankfully, you have a guy that's going to go 8 for 11 from three, and that just completely breaks and neutralizes all of that for the most part. And you know, credit to Jared too, because even like once he had got going that way, like in the second half, typically it's if you're not able to get those type of shots, you just maybe not even score in the second half or like whatever. But he started putting the ball on the deck. Some of those layups that he was hitting were just like really tough, man. Considering how many blocks that they had, right? Like some of those finishes that he was getting in there, like Foster wasn't getting those, Roach wasn't getting those, Flip wasn't getting those.
Scoop lay in the high Harkins,
on the right side there. That was nice. He also had that nice pull up in the middle of the lane in the first half there too, where he does that thing that's like just on the edge of offensive foul, where he just pushes off enough to create some space. To his credit, that hasn't been called so far this year, I don't think.
Yeah.
And just completely dominated his matchup against the Green kid. I guess he's a senior.
Darren Green.
I mean, he just completely, I mean, that dude was frustrated.
Yeah, dude was shoving him, two hands shoving him. I mean, it was getting chippy with him. But I mean, I get it, dude. Dude with painted fingernails is cooking you, bro. Like,
it's, And he's a freshman.
A freshman.
He's just stealing your lunch, dude.
Have you guys seen the film room thing from?
Yeah, with him and Jay.
Yeah. They're talking about him playing off of 2 feet, like as he's getting in the paint. Like, I think that's really been something, you know, probably what's been the changer for him.
Yeah.
Especially those drives lately.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that too. That's a great listen if y'all hadn't. It's pretty long, but I recommend it, like, because it talks about that idea of transitioning from high school to college and how, like, conceptually or intellectually, you know that things are going to be a little bit harder, but it takes a while for that to really, because you're just so used to just being able to, I can do whatever I want. People aren't really scouting me in high school at that level, right? Not to that extent. And even if you do, odds are that you have someone that can do anything about it are slim to none.
Yeah, you don't have 2 7-foot guys standing in the paint waiting on you.
Or a 6'7", just uber athletic, like future NBA level wing out there that's just going to like lock you down. So yeah, I mean, Jared was absolutely phenomenal. I think it's also worth mentioning Caleb here a little bit, right? Like, we don't have Tyrese. Caleb comes in, plays 35 minutes. Again, not super aggressive, you know, 4 points, 3 assists. I think he had 4 rebounds too, but only the 1 turnover in 35 minutes is. And he had a few of those, man, those finishes where he, I thought like that one, like layup, it's like he had that, but dude just came all the way over. And it's like, I guess you got to punch that, right? Yeah. Or you got to go up and you can't just let that get blocked. But,
and the one he got whistled for a travel on was like, that would have been an and one there, you know? So,
had that really nice floater though in the lane. Had a nice finish too.
And he had a nice finish. I've noticed if he goes right, man, he can finish through a lot of contact and finish a lot. It's his left, going left, he doesn't. Doesn't have a high success rate at yet.
He just strikes me as a guy where it's like, I really hope he's just a multi-year guy. He's going to come back. I think you could, everything's there that you want. Like physically, it's there. He's not like sabotaging the offense in any way. I think with another year, the defense, just being more aware of like how to play team level defense, because I think his individual defense is okay. It's just learning team defense concepts and stuff like that.
I mean, that's the way a lot of like, longer, stronger guards are, where if you switch them one-on-one on somebody, they're okay, because that's a very simple task, right? Just stay with your man. But team defense is hard. But apparently I think we mentioned on the podcast before, he studies a ton of film, like more than anybody on the team. So I look forward to kind of seeing what he can learn over the summer and bring to the table.
Yeah, especially when the reins kind of come off a little bit, right? Yeah. And it becomes a little bit more of your team, or you are the lead ball handler, depending on kind of how it shakes out with a few other guys. But a lot to be excited for him. Really, the entire backcourt played well. I mean, you had Roach doing Roach things. You had Jalen Blake's coming in and just shattering offensive rating with a 207, which is just ridiculous.
He had a great like 3 or 4 minute stretch there.
I mean, he came in, he took a charge. Then he gets the steal and one.
And one. And then he gets the free throw. It's all his free throws.
Yeah. He gets an over the back. He gets an over the back call on Bobby, like all within like a minute and a half. Like I said, man, the kid just plays his ass off and gets you extra possessions, you know?
Yeah. Another guy that I know there's been a lot of chatter, but another guy where I would absolutely in a heartbeat take senior year, Jalen Blake's coming back. He's probably going to graduate, so he's going to have some other options. Who knows what he wants to do with his life outside of basketball, but. Would totally be down for one more of that. But let's see, who else? We talked about most of the guards here.
Sean Stewart's minutes, I thought, were, you know, 4 minutes, but 4 rebounds. Got the steal that led to Flip getting
his only easy dunk. His only easy look there. I thought Sean could have played a little bit more in this game. You know, kind of a tough game for Ryan, too. I think both of his shots were blocked, right? It's like, you know.
When I'm goaltended. I thought it hit the backboard first.
It did. But, it definitely hit the backboard first.
Ryan was a +7 in this game, which was better than Flip. And to my point earlier, it was like, I think that's precisely because he's not the kind of player to hunt offense. And when you have somebody as hot as McCain, you don't want another player hunting offense, right?
Right. And I think that's why I would have liked to seen Sean take some of those, because he's not going to really do that either. Right. And if you're getting 4 rebounds in 4 minutes, it's like, all right, dude, like just see if he can get in there and muck things up for us a little bit, especially on the offensive glass too. Yeah. But yeah, got some good minutes from them, especially Blake's and Stewart, you know, obviously needed that with Tyrese being out. Not quite the offensive explosion game that we've seen from Mark in the last few, but I thought it was still a very good game from Mark. I thought it was good defensively again, as always. You mentioned it in our chat offline here, but just the free throw shooting is a little polarizing for him, where he'll have those like 9 for 9 stretches, and then he'll have like 2 for 6 and 1 of 5s. And maybe that's just a function of the trajectory of the shot too, a little bit, right? Like just not a lot of room for error on that thing.
How about the 21 footer or whatever, right up against the line. That was unfortunate.
Yeah, splash that one. Yeah,
but he's been hitting every shot from the top of the key lately.
Yes, the jumper is he's got it dialed in, I guess. If you,
I thought you were gonna say it was like wet or something. I was like, I don't know if I would describe it that way.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Is it more? I don't want to say it.
It's like a rock skipping across, you know. It's like
soggy.
Yeah, soggy. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, but for him to only have one turnover, two fouls, 34 minutes, playing great defense, it's just that's what you need. I guess I've been talking about it a little bit long enough. Before we go on to that, though, let's briefly touch on the turnovers here. So we've kind of hinted at it a little bit over the last several weeks of, you know, this was a team that was like top five in turnover percentage in the country for like a long time. Now it's 21st, another game here where we have 17 turnovers. Concerned about that at all, fellas? Or, you know, Jared has five, right? Yep. Hard to get too upset at him. Roach has four. Blip with six was pretty brutal.
We've seen that from him before, I believe. You know, so
yeah.
High numbers like that.
Flips are the reason that flips were a little bit more frustrating because it was a sign of like doing too much, right? The spin, the off balance, the throwing it up. Whereas Roach and McCain just didn't really adjust well to what Florida State was doing. They were allowing them to get beat off the bounce and then just poking it out, just reaching with their length. They're just popping it out. That was just okay. You know, you got to just adjust to how they're going to defend.
McCain had one in that transition play where he's like, he's almost falling down as he's trying to throw it to Jeremy. Thinks Jeremy is going to float out to the 3-point line, but Jeremy still cutting.
Yeah. He wanted Roach to, because that's what he would have done, right? He's like, hell no, I'm not going in for the layup, bro. I'm going out here. And to be fair, that's what Roach should have done too. But
probably, yeah.
Right. I also felt like there were some lazy passes. You know, very casual from Flip, a couple from Roach.
He would try to skip pass that would get picked off. I mean, it's hard to do that against Florida State.
Yeah, and a lot of those where he tries to throw in the middle too, right? Like Jared's cutting and it's like, it's nice if you can make that pass, but like some of those, dude, it's like, it's a reason why you can't make those passes because they're just really hard to do, especially over the length. I mean, at one point, Florida State had like five dudes out there that were 6'7" or taller. Like,
And I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I think Florida State like normally causes a lot of turnovers. Like that's kind of one of their MOs. And look, we've played down there. It's the same thing every year. It's basically a football game. You know, it's going to be physical. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they want to play, right? Yeah. That's how they want to play. They play a lot of guys. So they're just running them at you.
Yep.
All right, let's just do it. Let's just talk about Flip for a little bit here, right? Like offensively, not a great game. Defensively, not a great game. No. I don't know. One thing that was curious to me, though, is that he didn't take any threes.
Yeah.
And we're playing against all that length, right? And they're just swarming the paint. It's like, why not just pop a little bit, right? Like, why not just do that? I don't know here. I guess I'll toss it to one of you guys here. What are you making of this, of the Flip game here? You just chalking it up as just dudes in a slump, or you're nervous, you're concerned about where this thing is headed, where are we at?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, we all know he hasn't been playing his best for a while now, but I was kind of optimistic that he was turning a little bit of a corner because I thought he was really good in a lot of ways in the Wake game, and I thought he was good in the second half of the Boston College game. Mm-hmm. I figured this game would be a struggle for him because we're near the bottom of Division One in getting our shots blocked, right? And what is the reason for that? Who's getting their shot blocked? It's mostly Flip, right? Ryan Young too, a little bit. But, you know, that's not really coming from our guards. So, you know, I kind of knew that that was going to be a little bit of an issue, but I also feel a little bit of it's on the coaching too, because I didn't really feel like we were running anything particularly good or creative for him. I just felt like he was just catching the ball at the top of the key and trying to drive into three guys. It's like there's got to be something we can do to move the defense a little bit more before he goes to the rim. Yep. So it's like he's cutting hard or something like that, you know?
Yeah. And I think, too, that's a good point, because I think how we want to use him is like how you will be able to use him in a few more years, right? When he gets a little bit more just like comfortable with that role of being a facilitator, being a creator, being a shooter, being a guy that can play on the block. Because right now it's like when it's good, but
like Frank Kaminsky or something, you know, like one of those players where it's just like skilled kind of three level scorer. And right now that's just not what he is.
Yeah. Well, and if he was to stay two more years or in 2 years from now, that's probably is what he's going to look like, right? Of just being awesome. Because it's just a few things are just the timing, right? Like you got to be so quick and so decisive. And if you're trying to, you know, some of those passes that he's throwing or, The spin move is just something that's, it's hard to get that to go, man. It's just, I know he loves it, and when it works, it looks great, but it just feels like it doesn't work more often than it does. But
he just doesn't have the best balance or footwork, in my opinion.
The balance is key there too, right? He does kind of get off balance a little bit, which leads to,
and it depends on who you're going up against too. If you got a 6'11 guy that can move his feet, he's just right there with you, letting you
right
basically twirl it. I mean, I know
twirl into a travel.
Twirl into a travel. I know one of them baited him into one of those.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, he spun in expecting contact, and the guy kind of just stepped back and let him, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's still one of those things. It's kind of like the Tyrese thing a little bit, right? That we talked about last week, of like his numbers across the board are just better all around than they were last year, minus some of the rebounding stuff, which is kind of weird. But everything else is, I mean, his block percentage has basically like tripled, which is good. But
I think the assists, steals, all that stuff is up. Field goal percentage, 3-point percentage. So he is having a better year. It's just relative to what we expected from him.
Right. Right. It's not quite been that All-American level year. And it started that way. I think that's the kind of weird thing, right? Of like the first, he was in double figures. What, the first?
I don't know, but I remember after like three games, wasn't he averaging like 24 points per game or something?
Yeah,
he had a couple of really big games to start.
Yeah, so the first eight games, he was in double figures, all of them. Charlotte, he only scored five, but I mean, we won that 80-56, so you don't take too much from that, because he immediately follows it up with 28, 13, 19, 12 against Syracuse. But then around that time, like right after that, he has seven against Notre Dame, whatever. But then dominates Pitt, 26, 30 against Georgia Tech. 19 against Pitt again, 17 at Louisville. But then these recent ones, he's got 9, 8, 8. So he's had three out of the last seven games or eight games. Yep. He's been in single figures, which is, you know, maybe just a sign of a slump, because it's not like his usage just really dipped that much, maybe a little bit, but not a ton here. But
I'll be interested to see what he can do against Miami here. Not to get into the preview really, but because Omir is only 6'7", correct?
Yeah.
You know, what's crazy is that, Kyle, I agree, you know, hasn't kind of lived up to what we expected from him, but still ninth in the KenPom, like, player of the year, you know, top 10. So it's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, the kid, he still helps. He's still doing a lot for us.
He's still a great player.
Yeah. We're still way better with him on the court. Like, if you look at a lot of the, like, 100%. On-off stuff and all that stuff.
And that's why I give him a little bit of a pass for some of the defensive aggressiveness. I almost wonder if it's like a 2013, like, Mason Plumlee, like, you know, you can't foul. We got to keep you on the floor. So, you know, pick your spots, I guess.
And that's the thing too, right? Because for all of the offensive stuff that's might not quite been at the level that we thought coming in, he's surpassed that to me on the defensive end by far, right? Like, he's held up. I mean, we talked about this not being a great game for him defensively, but I think over the course of the season, he's been way better than most people have given him credit for, especially being able to switch and guard the perimeter.
And some of his best defensive games are actually like the lowest foul games, because he's been able to stay out there. Against Wake, didn't he only have like one or two fouls?
Yeah, he had two fouls. Yeah. And
38 I thought minutes. That was maybe his best defensive game.
Yeah.
And he's picked up a lot of like of those silly fouls or offensive, you know, charges called on him, stuff like that lately. So if you're getting fouls around the rim that, you know, contesting shots, like, so be it.
Yeah, totally, totally. The ones I don't like are just like the grabbing on the perimeter or something like that.
Yeah.
Or against Florida State, when it's like, clearly y'all lost the ball, it's a turnover. Yep. He's got a wide open lane. It's a layup, and then you just kind of bump into him to give him the and one. It's like, you can't do that, right? Like, that's what you got to knock out. But you know, so maybe get a bounce play game. I do think we should talk about that in the Miami preview here coming up. But should be a game where hopefully he can at least be able to see the rim a little bit better than he did against Florida State. But let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and let's talk about some of this bracket reveal stuff.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever, and this time it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars, new season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, well, let's come back. So I think it was Saturday, the committee revealed their like top 16 seeds. I don't really want to go through all of it because immediately like Purdue lost today, right? So there's going to be some of that stuff that's going to fall around a little bit. Connecticut just blows the brakes off of Marquette. So, you know, if they did it today, I'm sure UConn's number one overall, probably pretty clearly. But we'll talk about Duke here. So they come in as the 12th seeded team overall, which projects you as a 3 seed in the West, unfortunately, with Arizona, Kansas, and Auburn. So let's just kind of pop there for a second. That's a pretty brutal draw. What did y'all make of that? Shoe, I'll go to this one to you first. Personally, I like the Arizona. I don't mind playing Arizona again. I would rather not have to do it that early, but it is what
well,
it is.
Well, the good news is, I mean, if you're the three, you don't have to play Arizona eight. And Kansas. You only have to play one of them, right?
No, we would play Kansas in the 2-3, right. And then okay. Auburn, Arizona would play. So more than likely, right. You'd have to beat Kansas and
Arizona.
Unless you're like me and doesn't think Kansas is getting to that point. But that's a different conversation. But
sure.
Pretty tough draw. I think it's tough when it's just when it's out West, right? Like if Arizona, yeah. They're the lowest one seed, I think. So for them to also get West just because of geographically no one else higher than them wants to go out there, that part kind of sucks. If we were playing them in the South or something, like if I could play them in Orlando or somewhere like that, sure. Don't mind that. But going out West is brutal.
We went out West last time, came out of it. But
and maybe we had Paolo that was from out there. And so, you know, Jared, you know, get him a little Manny Petty and just go bonkers out there, you know.
I don't feel like maybe Auburn is too much to worry about, but I don't know what you guys think about them. But Kansas for me is not about Kansas, the team who I think is not like a peak Kansas team. For me, it's more Bill Self.
Bingo. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Like that. He is like such a good coach at exploiting weaknesses of other teams.
Yep. On both sides of the ball, which is pretty scary, right? Like, and he's, I can go back and look maybe, but just like emotionally, it just felt like he's just like owned us, like, especially when it mattered.
They only play like six, they're not deep, you know, they don't have a deep team, but
right.
Older guys, Dickinson, McCullough, Harris, the point guard, you know, so. Yeah,
that Dickinson flip matchup would be exciting to see that, though. That would be cool to see that.
McCullough and Mark, that's good.
They
got the Australian kid, so maybe him and Tyrese can chirp back and forth. look, I'd like to see it, but
I'll take the 3 seed right now, though. Like already, I was afraid they were going to peg us as a 4 seed, like coming into this, right? It's like I was really hoping we were kind of moving up past that a little bit, but I don't really understand the net anyway, but
yeah, it seems like they pay attention to it when they want to and don't when they don't want to. Like wasn't North Carolina at 2?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to me that doesn't make any sense when you're 9th in the net. But yeah, I felt like they should have been a 3 as well.
And I think it's kind of trending that way for them too, right? Like they gotta be trending down. But I think they had them as like did they have them as the last 2 or the top 2?
No, they were number 5 overall. So
yeah, that was
crazy.
The wild part. Yeah,
so they're the top 2. Yeah,
they're right. They were in consideration for 1 almost with 6 losses. They're 5-4 in quad one. That was
before the six loss. Well, no, it wasn't. Okay, no, you're right.
Yeah, they're 5-4 in quad one, 6-1 in quad two, which is solid. Like, that's good. You know, if you look at us, we're only 2-2 there, but we're also 5-2 in quad one. So it's, I don't know, man.
Yes. So somebody please explain to me like what they're actually basing it on, because
It's not the net, because the net, Alabama's fifth in the net. You know, like,
right. They're not even. But then it's not. It's not anything like KenPom either, because North Carolina and Duke are neck and neck there. Auburn, like, is somehow seventh in the net, despite being 2-5 in quad one games. So I don't know what to make of that either.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's, I don't know. You know, it makes it where it's like, why even pay attention to the net, right? Why even look at that stuff?
Like, I mean, I know the net is not the only factor. I'm just confused about how they're weighing all the different metrics and factors.
A lot of discrepancy there. Right. Yeah. So if we were, let's see. So if we were the 3 in the West, I don't know off the top of my head, but where would that put, what pod would that put us in?
I'm sure it's playing in like Sacramento or where did we play
it last would time? Be the second, but I'm talking about like that first weekend.
The first
would
weekend,
we still get Charlotte for that, or that would be out, right?
I'm guessing we would not,
because they wouldn't let us play like Kansas and Charlotte for being the 2 seed. Although if we were South Carolina, maybe we could sneak one out. But yeah, I was looking now just to see where they were all at. But
I mean, I would take a 3 seed considering where we felt we were just like a few weeks ago, honestly. You know, we were talking about the 4 or the 5, and I remember heading into that Virginia Tech game, I was like, if you don't win this one, you might fall like to 6 or something. You know, now we're all the way kind of back up to number 3, so like we have a chance to, I don't know that we can get to a 2 seed. I mean, I guess if we won out or something, but if we do well down the stretch here, we could at least move up to not be the last 3 seed.
Yeah. And then Lunardi does his and has Duke as a 4 seed trending downward in the West. Like,
why are we trending downward?
I have no idea.
And he still has 4 straight games.
He has Carolina as a 2 in the East, playing in Charlotte with Michigan State as their 7. So we all know what happens with that. With UConn there as the 1. But yet we're stuck in Salt Lake City playing Yale. And then we'd play the winner of the Dayton-Samford matchup. And I'd be praying pretty hard for Samford in that one. But I don't really get that. The good thing is that there's still plenty of time left for us to kind of change all of this stuff.
But, yeah, sure.
I know you love the net, and I know your buddy was talking about it. So give us your little breakdown here on how you feel about this.
To my old roommate, Thomas, he's a big Wake fan, so I'm sure he's been.
Oh, he loves the net.
I'm sure he's listened to a lot of Steve Forbrandt's. But I mean, it's better than the RPI, but it's not perfect by any means. I think Forbes ran it about like you can beat a team and you move down in the net and they move up. Like it's. And I know the point differential thing, that makes a difference, obviously. I don't know why. You know, he was kind of quoted as saying, you know, I get paid to win by 1, not to beat the spread. I don't know what you guys think about the spread thing. I mean, to me, it's like you kind of game the system by those early games when you're playing, you know, Sisters of the Poor or whatever. Instead of playing your bench and developing guys, you just run the score up. Because if you look at like Alabama, for instance, they're 5th in the net. They're 2-6 in quad one. They're 7-1 in quad two, granted, so that's pretty good. But if you look at their quad three and quad four wins, it's basically they hit 102-46 on somebody, you know, or 111-60 on somebody. So I guess it's a way to treat the computers, as GP would call it, essentially. So the net's just a weird thing.
Really, if you want to look at who has perfected this, it's Kelvin Sampson in Houston. Like the way that they schedule, because they basically only scheduled to where all of their quad one games, they played number 8 Iowa State on a neutral, and then they played number 10 BYU. I think that was a conference game, though. All of those other ones, though, are 35th, 49th on a neutral, 19th, 54th on the road, 46th on a neutral. They're not playing top 10 teams, but they're getting the same bump.
Yeah, that's my problem.
Because you're playing them, right? You're getting the same level of bump of we're treating the 8th ranked team the same as we're treating the 49th ranked team on a neutral. And it's like, no, bro. Like, Iowa State and Utah are not the same.
Keep the net. Get rid of the quads.
Yeah.
Well, like, I don't understand yeah. these boxes and these like arbitrary cutoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why is it a quad one win if we beat the 29th team at home? But if we beat the 31st team at home, it's quad two.
Yeah.
Like, there's no difference between those teams.
Right. Yeah.
And the fact that it fluctuates too. Like, the
right.
So, what if you beat a team and because now that all the games equal the same, November all the way to March? Yep. But say you beat a team in November, December, team that's hot, really good, their star player gets hurt, and then they just fall off the face of the earth. And then at the end of the season, you're not credited for anything for that, basically.
Right. It should be what quad were they in when you played them.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, there's some wiggle room with that, too, because at the beginning of the year, there's a little guesswork.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Maybe that you have to adjust for that somehow, but I think there's no reason you can't just have a completely like linear weighted system where the 29th team counts just a little bit more than the 31st, but it's not a separate quad.
Right.
Like this is literally what KenPom is, for example.
Yeah.
Like just have a system like that.
Yeah, I agree. Because I mean, I'm not bashing Houston for it. I mean, I think they're clearly good. And I think they've kind of proven that this year in the Big 12 and everyone thought, but like, when you look at how they schedule, dude, it is like the very cutoff for like quad one level where they played 11 games and then they played only two quad two games. And those are those games that don't really benefit you, but you can lose, ask Duke. And then all of their other ones, quad three, 154, 144, 156, 126. And then it's seven quad fours. Games that they have no chance of even potentially losing, right? These are like almost sub 300 level teams, sub 250 level teams. But it's genius computer manipulation, for sure.
I think there's kind of three things that are weighing us down right now. Obviously, the loss at Georgia Tech, quad three.
Probably going
to stay at quad three. Carolina has that one too, so at least we have that. But the Arkansas, right now, they're at 135. So if they move down one more spot, that goes to a quad three as well. So I looked at their remaining schedule. I don't think there's any way that they stay. So I have a feeling we're going to finish with two quad three losses, unfortunately, no matter what we do. So I think we need to at least just win the quad ones and quad twos that we have left. I mean, the weight game right now is a quad one. Obviously, it's going to be on the road. So, and they'll stay within the top 75. So that'll stay a quad one. And then the Carolina home game will stay a quad one also.
Got to win this Miami game because they could potentially still threaten to go up, but they've lost, four straight? So it's like, you gotta get that.
Where is Virginia right now? You know?
Virginia is 21st.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's
They're 21st ranked. They're 40th in the net. So they're quad two. No chance of even becoming.
Well, I mean, if they like won every game, including beating us, but that doesn't help us. So
maybe if they beat Carolina and a few others, they could maybe kind of sneak up there.
I just think them getting up to 29th is just a bit too far. So that's a lose-lose game where like you beat them at home. It's just a quad two win.
It's funny. Yeah. They're the 21st ranked team in the nation and you beat them at home. They're like, nope, that's quad two, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Quad two, yeah. Another one is State, who is 76. So they could, if they pop up one spot,
that's a quad one opportunity.
It's just wild.
The arbitrary cutoffs is just wild.
Yeah. And then it's like, well, why even get too worried about it if they're not even clearly going by that? So, yeah, whatever. Yeah. I think right now I'll take the three seed. Would prefer not to be in the West if I had to choose, but I mean, whatever. I think I'd rather be over there with Arizona and Kansas than with some other kind of configuration of like UConn or whoever else. So,
obviously, it depends on who we lose to. If we were to lose a couple more games, but where do you think we'd end up? Like, let's say we end up going 15-5 in conference, so we drop two more. And let's say that we do beat UNC and Virginia, which I feel fairly good about because I think UNC is just not playing nearly as well as they were when we played them. And then UVA, we always kind of match up pretty well with them. So let's say we win those two, but we drop two other games, like the Wake game and then NC State or something. What would you guys' prediction be for seeding?
I mean, I think it's going to depend on everybody else, but...
Yeah, if we won, if we only lost those two, though, that would just be two quad one games that we would lose. And yep. everything else that we would get, including we'd get a quad two, two quad twos.
And a quad one win.
A quad one and a quad four, whatever Louisville is.
Yep.
Quad 10.
Yeah, but how did the other one shake out? Did the Arkansas one go to a quad three, or does it stay a quad two?
Right, yeah.
There's a lot that can shuffle that's out of our hands, honestly.
Yeah.
In that regard.
I would take that, though, if it meant losing at Wake, losing at State, but then beating Carolina and Virginia just to kind of get them below
in
up,
theory,
to get
we'd,
them to...
In theory, we could win the ACC if that happened. Like, all that would have to happen was UNC would have to lose to UVA.
To Virginia, yeah,
and we would have to beat UVA and North Carolina, and then Virginia finish second, and then or third, and then boom, that would win it. And then you're looking, as long as you don't lose, what is it, Thursday is the first... quarterfinal. So if you didn't lose
could
Thursday,
that potentially get us into the two seed territory that Carolina is sitting in right now. Like, why aren't we perceived in that kind of same spot?
Yeah, like if we had less total losses than Carolina, because we would at that point, or maybe it'd be the same number, but we had won the ACC. I think the optics of winning the ACC could maybe get you into that two seed.
Yeah. If nothing else, maybe it forces them to look at it in terms of, like, is this conference going to get two of them, right? Because, I mean, I don't know. Where else are you going here? I mean, Tennessee looks like they could kind of be – they could fall, right? They've already lost six. Iowa State is going to be in that conversation, I guess. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it shakes, I guess. But, all right, let's talk a little bit about Miami, man. So – again, it's a road game, so you're a little concerned there. You're a little nervous, I think, heading into that. But, man, they have just not been good. They've lost four straight. They've lost five out of six. Their defense is just abysmal for the most part. And even their offense hasn't been anything, like, to write home about. I mean, they got some dudes, though, right? They got what? They start one, two, three, four, five juniors. They just start all juniors. Obviously we were familiar with Matthew Cleveland from FSU is now over there too. Nigel Pack, we're all pretty familiar with him. We tried to court him for a little bit. Luka Popler, probably pretty familiar with him as well by now. So they got guys, they're coming off a Final Four. Now they don't have some of the wings, and Wong that they had last year that were just killers for them. But
They got a freshman that I watched one game can hit threes. George, I think.
Tyshawn George, he's 41% on 103 attempts. Like,
Then I don't know if you guys seen this, but Nigel didn't play in the BC game, and I don't know if he's expected to play Wednesday night versus us. So,
that would help.
I would take that. Yeah, would totally take that.
Because I imagine you're gonna probably hit on what I was gonna hit on, right? The danger with this game is always Larrañaga's pick and roll.
Pick and roll, yeah.
Yeah.
To me, this is a big defensive game for Flip. We need him to be really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, on both ends, really. Yeah. Because I think this is also a game where they're not putting a bunch of size. They only have one guy at 6'10 on the roster that's a freshman that doesn't really play a ton. Omir is 6'7". Now, he's going to try to space you a little bit. But, I mean, he's only taking 46 threes on the year. That's not like an insane... volume or anything.
What I'm hoping is that John shows on the game footage from last year and they kind of take that personal.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because that was ugly. We just got slaughtered, essentially, and wanted to take that one back. Well, the Boozers were there for that. Remember that last year?
Yeah. Well, then we got them in the ACC tournament again after that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we play them at home or not? We just played them one more time? Or we
played them.
I think we beat them at home too. We split with them, didn't we?
Yeah. I think we had a close win at home. And
we
then
beat
like,
them by two at home, and then they blew us out like a couple weeks later. And then we beat them again in the ACC tournament.
Seven or eight.
Yeah, which is one of the most fun games from last year for me. That was like 85-78, but it was just, I mean, it was a great game to watch.
Oh, it was pretty close most of the way, honestly.
And Flip was incredible in that game. So he didn't miss a shot. He was so good in that tournament. He missed one of his threes, but yeah, he was just, really, really good.
Because he was amazing in the Pittsburgh game too, right before that.
Yep. Yeah, we dominated Pittsburgh in that game. That was really fun.
Yeah, it's just that small ball, you know. If they are able to spread us out and get to the rim and spray threes as well, like, that's when we get in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, because they can shoot the three, right? They're 37% as a team, so they can get them up. And even their offensive, like, profile looks like it should be better than, like, 68th or whatever it is, but it just hasn't been. I mean, they're 10th in the conference, so something has happened in the last few weeks for them where it's just not been good. I don't know. I guess we'll kind of jump in here and do a little bit of a prediction on it, though. So KenPom has a 79-73 Duke spread on that. Shu, you taking the cover there, or where are you going?
Yeah, if Pac doesn't play, yeah, I'd take that.
What if he does?
I'll still take it.
All right, I like it. McCain
likes it in Florida, man.
That is true. What about you, Raul? You like Duke in this matchup, or a little wary?
Yeah, I'm a little wary. It's been a couple games since I predicted a loss, so I got to get back on brand here. I think that they're gonna play their best offensive game in a while, and we're gonna lose a tough one down there.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those things where it's like I felt that Florida State could get us right on the run in of this road trip. And so now that we looked pretty good and handled that shorthanded, now I kind of feel good about this Miami one, but like I want us to do it because the one at Wake scares me the most. Yeah, probably, that's right. That's in terms of like, that's the one of, if you lose to Miami, you're really staring at like a potential 2-game skid right there, which is tough to swallow, at this point in the year. But I don't know, man. They've just been so bad. So I'll take Duke to cover. I'll say about 10. Okay. So yeah, especially if, and I don't know if Pac's going to play, but I'm assuming if he does, he's going to be semi-limited. Now again, Proctor might not play as well, but
yeah, I guess that's a big point too.
We've played some pretty big games without Tyrese, you know. We beat Baylor by 8 without Tyrese. We just went down there and handled things in Florida State. Now, you know, obviously McCain had 35, so that's a big factor too. But I'll say Duke by about 10. Need this one, especially heading into Wake after that. But
I believe that would put us in tie for first because we're essentially a half game back right now with Carolina.
Yeah, I think they're 12-3 or 11-3.
Yeah, well, they played one more game.
Yeah, but they're off this week, right? So this will be the catch-up game, essentially.
It would be a tie, except they'd have the tiebreaker, of course, because head-to-head. But
yeah.
Did we see anything for certain that Tyrese's concussion came from the previous game, Wake game? I assume it did.
I remember him going down. He got hit.
Me too.
So
it's just kind of weird because he played the rest of the game. You know, maybe he just didn't realize that. I mean, he didn't play well, so.
Yeah. It could have been like it's some kind of protocol, like if you get checked out for it, that you have to sit the next game at least.
So, but that game would have been 5 days before the Florida State game, right? Something like that.
It was Monday night.
Monday. So, in theory, by this Wednesday, that's like a 9-day gap. I feel like a concussion protocol is usually like a week at most.
Yeah, probably.
Typically, unless there's something else that's just lingering there. I haven't seen any news, which is typically, I don't know if they would put anything out. I mean, he's going through concussion protocol, so he probably has to clear some stuff there. He didn't play Saturday, Wednesday. You would hope that if nothing else, he's there for Wake. You know, I think that would be safe to bet on that. But anything else we need to hit on here?
Well, I was just going to say he could certainly help us with the perimeter defense for defending some of their guards. Also just like, I feel like with ball security as well, like, you know, he's been fairly not turnover prone. So the more ball handlers we have out there, the better, you know, talking about that trend of increasing turnovers lately.
Yeah. And when he's good, it just really elevates everything else that we're doing. Like when he's on, when he's good, Yeah. Definitely defensively would be nice too, because our defense is actually trending really well. So it was like 38th like a week and a half ago, 25th now, in a good spot.
There is one thing I did want to ask you guys about. John Watson posted this. So McCain tied Austin Rivers for 10th on the most three-pointers made by a freshman with 58. He's only got one more to tie Trajan Langdon and three for John Shire. Gary Trent leads it with 97. We got 8 games to go. How many do you think it gets to? It's got 58 now.
Well, I guess it sort of depends on how many more games we play, right? So we've got 8 regular.
8 for sure, yeah.
I don't think he can get to Trent's number, unfortunately. I think the volume just probably wasn't there throughout the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he could get to, like, if we played 2 or 3, if we played a couple ACC tournament games, we played like 3 NCAA tournament games, he could get into like 80s maybe. Yeah.
So Ingram is sitting at 4th with 80, mm-hmm. and then Cam Reddish had 89, JJ had 95, and Gary Trent had 97.
I'm surprised Reddish had that many.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
RJ Barrett and Jason Williams tied for 5th with 73, so I think he can get past that.
I think he can get to 4th.
I
could see him getting to like 80, right? That's 22 more made 3. And it depends too, right? He shot 11 threes the other night. If he's going to start putting up 10 threes consistently every game, then maybe he gets there. But and if you go to the ACC championship game and then you also go to like an Elite Eight or something like that, then you're adding, you know, several more games in there. But I'd like to see him go for it.
Yeah.
Shoot him, bro.
Yeah, let him fly, dude.
Yeah, let him fly. Why not? We need it. So, all right, fellas. Well, I guess we'll get out of here. Probably come back sometime middle of the week here. Nice little Wednesday, Saturday setup going forward for the next few ones. So, only have one more of those Saturday, Monday turnaround. So, that part's kind of nice. But in the meantime, rate, review, subscribe. You can find us on the boards at thedevilsden.com. You can email us at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on X/Twitter @devilsdenpod247. Keep the faces strong and the revive.